This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Drew Dinsick of NBC Sports will join us. We will go over the NBA draft, get his thoughts, top 10, over-unders, anything you can bet, anything you can think of in terms of the draft. We will get into that. Maybe some NBA offseason, the futures. You know, this will probably stop doing NBA at some point here because it's funny. Did almost no NBA all regular season. Once the playoffs get here, it's a lot of NBA just because that's what's seasonal, that's what's topical. But once we get past this, maybe a quick recap of the draft on Friday, our next show. And the draft is now Wednesday and Thursday. A couple changes. It's now a 2-day event. Wednesday and a Thursday. It used to just be on a Thursday, which I liked, but it was a scenario where it would go till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and nobody—I mean, unless you're a real diehard—nobody's staying up to watch the second round. It's been on for hours, so they space it out better. They get two nights out of it. It makes sense. It does make for an odd dynamic of Sunday game seven, and then you get 2 days off. Then a draft on Wednesday. It's very condensed, but you know, once we get past this, barring any major moves, we'll shift gears back to baseball. We will get ready for NFL, college football. I have to get ready for college football. But we will look. It'll be summer. We'll start to do, you know, some different things here in terms of the sports. We've been doing, I know, a lot of NBA recently, but we'll turn the page here quickly. But just going through the draft here, the draft, it used to be one of my favorite nights, but it's different now. And it's a little better this year because these kids have mostly these top 10, top 20 picks. Like if you watch college, you mostly know who these guys are. For a while, it just the draft lacked luster, lacked juice because so many of these guys were either one and done. Almost all of them that go to college are one and done, at least towards the top, or they were international guys who you've never seen. So it's hard when you're watching guys that are drafted that you haven't seen and you have no opinion on it. Just it's not the same as, you know, it used to be. Even the best college players would stay a couple years or 3 years or even all 4 years, and you know them, you formed opinions on them, so it was just more enjoyable. But most of these guys at the top have at least played in college. Not, you know, once when they're there a year, and especially if they don't make the tournament like a couple of these guys, you don't have that familiarity with them. You don't form those opinions. But just based on the odds, the favorite, we know it's going to be Flag 1. We think it's going to be Harper 2. Edgecombe from Baylor is the short shot or the favorite to go 3. Knipple from Duke, short shot to go 4. Trey Johnson, the sharpshooter from Texas, favorite to go 5. Ace Bailey, who seems like he is just no picnic. His team didn't make the tournament. He's got bad management. Seems like he's, you know, prickly about where he's going to go. He is the short shot to go 6. And then Fear 7. Then Demon 8. Malawash from Duke is 9. Derek Queen, the Maryland freshman, 10. So, I mean, you know most of those names. You know just about all those names. If you're a big college basketball fan, if you're a fringe college basketball fan, you've seen a few of them. But when they don't stay for that long, you don't have that familiarity with them. I don't have any strong opinion. I mean, there's two ways to bet the draft. There's you marry your college. Now you're familiar with the college game. You're familiar with the pro game, and you marry that knowledge into, all right, this team needs that. This guy provides that. And you make a bet that way. Can certainly be effective. Or the two way is you just get the intel. You either know somebody that knows somebody, or you just are maniacal about reading who worked out who, reading every article you can from these beat writers, right? This guy had a bad workout, this guy had a good workout. And again, you have to take that stuff at face value, which is very, very tricky here because it's disinformation season and they don't want you to know necessarily who they like or who they don't like. So it's tricky reading between the lines and, you know, what to believe and what not to. But those are really the two ways to approach it. Again, if you're some of these states don't even have it. A lot of these markets haven't bet up, and these books just don't want any part of booking the draft. Even there's going to be years they won. I know the NFL draft went off kilter with the Travis Hunter trade, and that threw everything off. And I know books did well there, but they're just so – they fear the worst because they win on everything. I mean, they win on baseball, basketball, football, games. They win on games because they get the 110. They get the juice and people throwing parlays and just – they win. With the draft, and it really – I think the turning point was 3 years ago now, Paolo Banchero – 20-1 a couple days before the draft to go 1. Nobody seemed to know except people in the know. The market didn't think he was going 1, and that was one where Woj said, oh, he's not going 1. It's going to be Jamari Smith. And they got beat to the punch on the info, and they've just not had the appetite to book this stuff since. And, if they're hanging big numbers and they just don't have the information and you do, they can really get crushed. So they take their ball and go home. They're very careful about what they put up, limits when they post it. They put it up and take it down just to say they had it up. So Should be a fun night, though. Love the draft. We'll see if we get any splashes. We'll see if it's chalk. But if you're a big college basketball fan, you know most of these guys, some of these guys, not like it used to be, but it's not as bad as it was in past years with just all international guys, all one and done guys, where even if you're a huge college basketball fan, you never heard of these guys. McNeely going for UConn, Walter Clayton from Florida looks like he can be in the first round. There's some buzz about the Heat at 20. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how he lasted 20. I mean, you watch him in college, you think, man, that guy's going to be an NBA player, a productive NBA player, for a long time. So we'll see. Still, reeling from that. It wasn't a dramatic game seven. It was more of a traumatic game seven with a T on Sunday night. We just, to reiterate what I said on Sunday, it was recording right after. So you don't always, say everything you want or say everything you think, but you just, as a sports fan, you just feel a little bit robbed, unfulfilled of what could have been an outstanding game, an outstanding finish. I still think OKC would have won, but one of the tough things in life is what ifs, and we'll never know. We'll always have that doubt. We'll always have the what ifs. Not that OKC has to sit here and apologize for holding up a trophy and winning a championship. They won it. They were the best team. Other teams have injuries. Injuries are just part of it. It was just an awkward night, though, to sit there and be all excited for a game seven and have him get hurt right away. And now, I mean, think about this. Think about the cruelty of sports. The Pacers were up a point at halftime, 24 minutes away from winning a title. They are now 88-1. They lose that game and they are now 88-1 to win the title next year. So you're 24 minutes away. They were probably, what was their lowest point on the money line on Sunday? Maybe 2-1, probably. They were probably like a 2-1. So hey, you have a shot, one in three chance or whatever. Up a point at half, and then now you're 80-1. Now you basically forget it. It's the boy, it's sports can be cruel. I've made this point in the past. I think I was talking about, was it football season when the Vikings have this dream season? They lose, they don't get the one, and next thing you know, they're done. And the same thing with the Lions, where they get the one seed, they lose in their building, and you got to start all over from the beginning. This is even worse because it's so hard to get back in the NBA. They don't have a great team. Halliburton's going to miss next year. So feel bad. Feel bad for the Pacers. I usually don't feel bad for pretty much anybody, but I do feel bad for the Pacers in that scenario. That's just tough to be that close to a title, and you've got to just, man, it's like going backwards on the board game. You're going all the way to the beginning at the board game because I don't know, how when your next trip comes. It's possible Halliburton never plays again in the NBA Finals. That's not. I don't know if it's, that's interesting. What would the odds be that Halbert ever plays again in the NBA Finals? I know he's a young player, but you can go a long time without playing. And Knicks haven't been there in forever. You just go through these teams. You can go a long, long time. Look at the Thunder. They had Durant, they had Harden, they had Westbrook. They were set up for years and years. They were going to be a little dynasty, and they lost in the finals. They trade Harden, and they took them 13 years to get back. And even that, they took a lot of great moves and a lot of luck along the way. So it's a cruel business. The odds for next year, OKC plus 225, Houston plus 750, Cavs 9-1, Knicks also 9-1, depending on where you shop. Timberwolves 13-1, Lakers 14-1. A couple that are interesting here. I just think you don't want to tie up your money for a plus 225 bet that won't cash even if it wins for a year from now. I understand last, 2 years ago, we would have said, oh, Jokic and the Nuggets, they're in good shape to repeat. They haven't even gotten back to a conference finals. This time last year, the Celtics, their two best players, Tatum and Brown, are in their prime. They get all these other really good players. They'll be right back. They didn't make the conference finals. It's hard. That being said, this feels different with OKC. Jalen Williams and Holmgren will get better. SGA's not going anywhere. I mean, he's going to be just as good. He's right in his prime, entering his prime. And they got a bunch of picks too, which factors into this draft here. If they want to make a splash and trade up to, five, six, seven, if they say, you know what, we need one shooter. We've got all these picks. We can't roster all of these players. We can only have so many guys on our roster. Let's add one dead-eye shooter, one guy we really like to fill a need, and let's try to make our team better right away instead of just compiling all of these assets. So I would completely understand if you bet OKC plus 225. The Cavs at 9-1, just because they blew through the East this year, and that's what the East had Tatum on Boston. That's when Halliburton. All right, they lost to the Pacers. They were beat up. Pacers were a buzzsaw at that point. They ran into a hot team. No reason the Cavs can't be right back there next year. And I don't think they're going to beat. They beat OKC in a final, but at 9-1, if you got them in a final, and maybe you just play them to win the conference, maybe that's the way to go. But the Cavs could be interesting. I'm tempted by Philly just because I do think the talent's there. And maybe if you nurture and pace Embiid and say, you know what, your season doesn't start until January or February, you play it once a week, and then we'll build you up to twice a week, almost like a pitcher where you build up his pitch count. And then by the playoffs, maybe you can hold up. I mean, I don't think it's likely. But at 35 to 1 to win the whole thing and 12 to 1 to win the East, could they get to a conference final? Not impossible. Not impossible. Chris Massaro, I know, mentioned the Pistons the other day. 60 to 1 to win the whole thing, 16 to 1. That goes to show you the disparity in the East and West, where you're 60 to 1 to win the whole thing, but you're only 16 to 1 to win the East. I mean, the East is just is wide open. And a lot of these teams, pretty much, you get 8, 10 of these teams. It's if we squint hard enough, we could see a path where we're in the second round or third round, and then who knows, anything can happen. So keep an eye on that, see how the NBA offseason unfolds. But coming up, Drew Dinsick, we will talk some NBA draft, get his thoughts, some bets. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him NBC Sports, Bet the Edge, the deep dive podcast, where he occasionally gets a word in here or there. He's the great Drew Dinsick. He joins us now. Drew, NBA draft, talk a little NBA finals recap. We got some trades, a lot to do. What's going on, man? How's everything?
Oh, everything is well. This is one of the funnest weeks of the year. I love NBA draft betting. It comes so suddenly, you know. Everybody, all the attention is on the finals, sucking all the air out of the room, and then you blink, it's over, and all of a sudden, you know, if you've been grinding on the draft for a couple weeks, you have a pretty advantageous position by this point. So I'm excited. Got a healthy amount of probable CLV here, which doesn't always mean you will win, but I'm pretty happy that the bets that I've made are, you know, are bets that are difficult to make right
Yes, and the CLV, you'd rather have it than not, but again, it guarantees
now.
nothing, as we've both learned, as we've all learned here over the years. Yeah, and it is such a quick turnaround. I mean, it was always a couple things. We never or rarely get a game seven in the NBA finals, so that turnaround hasn't been as prevalent. And then they moved it for whatever reason last year from a Thursday to a Wednesday. So it's really, I mean, you're going Sunday game finals, Monday off, Tuesday off, and then Wednesday you look up and there's a draft. So it is really condensed, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the fact that the combine and so much of the process happens at the same time as the playoffs, where,
Right.
you know, you really just you know, if you're a lottery team, you know, you can get away with a lot in the cover of darkness, you know, as everybody is kind of focused on the playoffs. So yeah, I think that has made this, and in particular this year, as you kind of look at the way that the lottery worked out, you know, slots 3 through 8 are kind of like s softly out of order in terms of like talent, team need and fit and all that, which has made this like a little bit more of a fun puzzle solving exercise than most drafts, right? Like if you have a pretty clearly stratified talent clusters, then you kind of know where guys are going to go, because the NBA doesn't typically draft for need. They just kind of take the most talented guys, right? And this year, the cluster of guys from 3 to 8, the margins between the, you know, you probably ask 10 scouts and you'll get 5 different answers as to who the third best guy in this draft is in terms of, you know, projecting as a pro. And so that makes it fun, on top of the fact that you have a team like Philly that has a bunch of kind of established guys and young players that are eating up a ton of that usage. And so you get a situation where, you know, most people would probably say your third most talented player is Ace Bailey, but Ace Bailey's camp wants nothing to do with Philadelphia, because he's just not going to get anywhere close to the type of offensive usage he needs to ultimately have the career arc he wants to have in Philly. So, yeah, it's made it for a really fascinating process this year.
Let's start with Philly, because we've heard it, you know, leading up to the draft. The draft starts at 3. We all assume it's going to be Flagg 1, Harper 2, and then are you buying the idea that Hedgecombe here is Edgecombe with an E? Edgecombe is the rightful favorite here at 3. Is a trade in the cards here? What are you thinking here with the Sixers doing at 3?
Yeah, I definitely agree he's the rightful favorite, but I am not as confident as the market price suggests right now on that one. Have a couple of ties to his camp, you know, through his agents and you know, AAU friends and folks at Baylor. And from what I can tell you, it does not sound like Philly has made sort of the typical overtures of, you know, promises and really kind of getting him excited to be a Sixer. Which at this point in the process, if you know what 1 and 2 are going to be and you're picking third, you know, you would think that would have kind of started, right? He had a good interview there, but not a great kind of experience, with his shoot around. I think they are cautiously optimistic he goes third, but I certainly wouldn't put it above about a 60% chance. Now, why would they, why would they be either, kind of smoke screening the basketball universe, or why would they be dragging their feet? There's plenty of reasons. It seems to me at least like the best fit for this team might be a more kind of you might be thinking more, we need a succession plan for Embiid if we're not expecting him to be able to give us 50 games a year. And so looking at a big would make a ton of sense for them. And there's a couple of decent bigs in this pool, but realistically, taking them in the top three doesn't make sense. So it would behoove the Sixers to listen to any and all offers to trade from three down into, say, the 5, 6, 7, 8 range. And I don't ultimately know that there's enough excitement in of teams in that range to come up for a guy like Ace Bailey. But that I think that's what they're waiting for, which is just, hey, we'll see what the last best offer we get for a trade up is, and if it's not good enough, then we'll just stick and pick three. And in that world, it's most likely Edgecombe, but I wouldn't rule out a surprise.
Anything worth a bet in that market at the moment?
At minus numbers we're seeing, no. But there is a fun way to kind of parlay that with what I think is pretty high likelihood, which is that if Vijay Edgecombe does go three, then Con Kneppel falls into the Hornets range at four. And I've heard a pretty sincere love between Hornets and Con at that spot. So if he is there at four, I would expect he is the pick. And there are some exacta markets where you can get Flag Harper, Edgecombe, Kneppel. Those were like in the plus 140-ish range this morning. And I'm looking at FanDuel now, and it's minus 105. So we're not the only people saying this.
All right, let's just kind of play it out through here then. Five is Utah. What's Ainge thinking? What does he want? I know they made comments, we're not tanking anymore. We're trying to win. It doesn't, like, you can try your hardest to win next season. In the West, you're going to be last, dead last in that conversation regardless. Where does that leave him? We know he's valued shooting in the past. Any feel here for what Utah does?
Yeah, Utah is a big mystery for me. I took some stabs at Fears. I've heard that they are in the point guard evaluation market, but they need everything. They need bigs. They need a talented offensive players to really help take a step forward, because right now they are missing everything. I would expect that a guy like Bailey would be on their radar. However, the way his team has conducted him th this process has been trying to keep him out of Utah. I don't have a good explanation as to why that they're doing that, but they turned down opportunities to interview and work out there. So they clearly don't want to be in Utah. I get why Ace Bailey doesn't want to be in Philly or Charlotte. Like, there's so much usage being soaked up by the Maxis and the LaMelo Balls of the world that you don't necessarily want to get your toes stepped on if you're expecting to be a 25, 30% usage player. But Utah has lots of opportunities, so I don't really get that. And Ainge is sort of a, take the most talented guy kind of a player. So Bailey going fifth wouldn't shock me. But most of my bets have been on Fears, just because he is a relatively young, high upside, can shoot, can be kind of the offensive general, floor general for that team, and has a little bit more kind of unknown upside potential with his age in particular. So there's one other kind of wrinkle here about taking that bet. I had heard at one point about a week and a half ago that that Pelicans were super high on Fears, and that they were going to try to take him seventh or potentially trade up to fifth for him. And then all of a sudden that completely died down. Like, the Pelicans kind of either found out through intelligence, or somehow got word that Fears was not going to be available, and so they kind of changed course from looking at him to looking at some bigs. And the only thing that would really make sense then is that Fears is off the board for them at seven. That would probably be five. And so that's kind of how I got there. But Fears and Bailey going five and six in some order is my expectation right now.
And that means Trey Johnson could fall all the way to seven at New Orleans. I mean, he's seems like a guy a lot of people love. The shooting touch, just natural score. You seem to think that's in play here, though.
I actually played him to go eight to the Nets. my spidey sense and again info on what the Pelicans did after they sort of kind of got over the hopes and dreams of taking Fears, where they were mostly looking at Malak and Queen. So the fact that they're in the big market to me is, and I'm more, it's interesting considering the way that that team is composed, rostered. But yeah, it sounds to me at least like they're going to take one of the bigs. And I don't know. I don't know better. I don't know better than any other scout, but I mean, that sounds like Malak to me. I think he's probably the higher floor, maybe lower ceiling bet of the two. So I've got him penciled in at 7, but haven't made any bets on that one way or the other. I guess outside of the fact that that forces Trey available at 8, and I bet a lot of exact landing spot for Trey Johnson to the Nets at 8.
Fill out the rest of the top 10. Anything you think is worth, because once you get to 8, 9, 10, you could play exact pick at some of these books. Otherwise, other books have top 10 markets. Some have both. Anything you think is worth a bet as we fill out 8, 9, 10, and how does Phoenix getting in the top 10 here with the 10th pick with the Durant trade? How does that factor in?
Yeah, the most interesting, and my draft night is going to be made or broken on one particular total. We are 8 players in, and I think is pretty, I would say pretty high confidence that the top 8 guys that go are the 8 guys we talked about. That means that there are only 2 more spots in the top 10 for a player like a Noah Esengwe, who is lined total right now at 9.5. That makes absolutely no sense to me. I do not understand how there can be basically one spot for him, and it's the 9th spot that can get him into his under here. So I've played a lot of over 9.5 on Noah Esengwe, and ultimately hoping that he is a mid-teens kind of a guy and not a top 10 guy. My general sense is that the 9th pick for Toronto is a bit up for grabs. If the 8 go that we mentioned, I'm mind wide open that number 9 could be just a full-on surprise shock. How, what, who, huh? Kind of just the fact that the way, trying to evaluate the way Toronto has kind of conducted themselves in this process, to me it seems like they may have a kind of a soft deal in place to trade out of this spot. There is one team with a lot of draft capital this year and not a lot of roster spots, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Just gonna ask about them.
To me, they look like the pretty obvious team to package picks and move up. My guess right now is that if that happens, it's to 9. And that if they are coming up, they are going for a player with a little bit higher upside who really kind of fits the next Lu Dort type of role. And that would be Coward. So Coward is sort of your party crasher for me. At 9 potentially, and it would be based on a trade to Oklahoma City Thunder. So this is totally wild and out there and out of the box. And there's a lot of I've been doing a lot of sleuthing on Reddit, which is not the best place to find information, don't get me wrong. But it seems like there's no point in Oklahoma City taking the 2 first round picks that they have this year, because they're just not going to be able to develop them. And so pairing those up, taking some of their future assets and going and getting a guy now who kind of fits a progressive role for them makes the most sense. And there's been a lot of breadcrumbs connecting them to Coward. So that's where my head is at for 9. And then Phoenix likely takes Derek Queen, in my opinion, if he's available at 10. However, there's also been a lot of support for Michigan center Danny Wolf. So,
Oh, really?
what's fascinating to me, right, is that we're at 9 and 10 in the draft, and I'm hearing names like Coward and Danny Wolf and
I've heard Richardson. Some people make the case that Richardson, after the trade, that Richardson might be on the radar. I don't know, the Michigan State kid. I have no idea.
Sure, lots of random names. I'm not even mentioning some of the other ones that I've heard. Like Carter Bryant is obviously a riser. I've heard a ton of people talking up Thomas Sorber out of Georgetown, right? And so after you get to, once you get to 9, like the 9 to 16 range is kind of like pick, find the guy that fits your system that works for you, and it could be somebody unusual. Have heard a lot of connections between Behringer and Chicago at 12. Have heard a lot of connections between or a lot of like a lot of people like Asa Newell, the power forward out of Georgia, right? So this next like tranche of players could go in a lot of different directions, a lot of different orders, but I do think it's pretty clearly stratified, and the guys with upside to go in the top 15, top 20 are guys like Wolf, and and Cedric Coward. Meanwhile, guys like Noah Esengwe, who I have over 9.5 on, like people with the good sense of what's going on, like Sam Vicente, did not mock him in round one. Right, so there's certainly some things that are kind of clearly able to prey upon in that mid first round in the totals markets, because I don't think that there's really the process happens so fast like we were talking about. I just don't know that people really know what that part of the board is going to look like.
How does that game play out the other night, game seven? If Halliburton doesn't get hurt, what happens?
Think the Thunder win by like 4 or 5. I think they still win. Their defense turned up so significantly in that second half, and obviously the offense looks so much better for the Thunder if Haliburton's on the floor. But it would have been more fun to watch. That said, biggest single game bet that I won all playoffs was game seven under. So
Oh, really?
yeah, it was like you see it in the moment and you're like, oh wow, this is great for me, but boy does this stink for him. Boy does this stink for basketball. So I had a lot of conflicting feelings in that moment.
It was a conflicting night. It was a strange night. It was bizarre. It was, just as a sports fan, it was unfulfilling because
Oh
when that
yes,
happened,
no
it just the
question.
air came out of the building. It was tough. It was really tough.
I agree. And Thunder, they were clearly the best team, but being so young, being so inexperienced, they really made a meal out of that. They made that so much harder than it had to be. If they come back next year and they, have a much easier time and take title number two, or if it's a couple years before we see them back there, I'm not going to be surprised if next time it's easier for them. But I think they were clearly the best team all season. Ultimately the rightful champions. But to do it that way and to be robbed of an epic finale with one of the best closers we've seen in the last 5 years in the playoffs with Halliburton the way he was playing, like that would have been amazing. So, oh well.
Is there a good bet on the board in terms of the futures now? I know, like 2 years ago, we were saying, oh, Jokic with Denver, they're in good shape to repeat. They haven't been back to a conference finals. The Celtics last year, oh, Tatum and Brown, they're in their prime. They didn't make it back to a conference finals. It's hard in the NBA. That being said, this feels different. Holmgren and Jalen Williams are just going to keep getting better. They're going to be in their what, fourth year. SGA is not going to keep getting worse. You're going to add in the Topics of the world. You're going to add picks. They could trade. I mean, they seem like even at +225, you know what? If you just bet it and forget it, that's probably not the worst bet. That being said, do you like that? Do you like anything further down the board? What do you make of this East? Take whatever direction you want.
East is an absolute trash fire. No interest in any title winner coming out of the East, which means if you can figure out who wins the West, you have your title winner, right? So playing the Western Conference doesn't make any sense to me. Just play the title. Whoever comes through the West is going to be -800 in the finals, like we had this year. Thunder, your easy answer. Your second choice for me is the Denver Nuggets. I think you take the Nuggets now. And you wait and you try to come in with some thunder as we kind of get into the season, because like there are some times when you are a championship winning team and you come into that next season and you have a chip on your shoulder because people aren't like really giving you the respect you deserve when you finally break through, and you play with a little bit of extra intensity while everybody else is warming up in November and December, right? But I actually see this very differently for the Thunder this year. These guys played a humongous amount of minutes throughout the regular season into the playoffs. They were the particularly SGA, the demand on his body was monumental. And if he is not like up to the level we saw in the playoffs until, say, January if he has some nagging injuries, if he misses time, if the Chet is a walking injury with the way he's built. Like there are a lot of worlds where I think the Thunder disappoint in the first third of the season next year. Now that they don't really have anything to prove except they need to be healthy come April. So I think there's a world where a healthier Nuggets team with a kind of fully fit Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr., who, by the way, were both just complete corpses by the time they got to the end of that divisional playoff, the second round of the playoffs. Those guys with the healthy, healthy with Jokic and Jamal Murray, to me, and Christian Braun, who took a massive step forward last year. The Nuggets are the second best team in the West and the biggest threat to the Thunder repeating, in my opinion. And they're at like 20-1 right now to win the title, which doesn't make any sense to me. So I think you take that, put it in pocket, watch that get shorter until about New Year's, and then come in on some Thunder, and then you got your winner.
Last one, what'd you think? Durant trade, Holiday trade, anyone? I know the consensus is Phoenix got robbed. I didn't think they were getting much back to begin with, so I understand the return wasn't great, but I wasn't expecting it to be great, so I didn't share people's sentiment like, oh my God, how could Phoenix do this? I didn't think they had many other options. So what'd you think of that trade? What'd you think of the Holiday trade as he goes from Boston back to Portland? He was traded from Portland to Boston. Now he goes back. He was only, I think, 4 days he was on the team, but any thoughts on either one?
I think the Phoenix did reasonably well considering, the leverage that they had. They clearly needed, they put themselves in the spot to a degree, but they needed to get the draft done before the deal done before the draft. So they had just had to take the best offer available when they had it. And that was a fine offer. I don't think it moves Houston into title contention like a lot of the people in the betting market have. Kevin Durant is their best offensive player now, and he is a shadow of the guy that was, championship, anchor at Golden State. So I don't realistically think they have a good enough offense, even with Durant in the building, to put them into contention with the likes of the Nuggets and the Thunder. But they certainly are, going to be a playoff team, could be a top three seed, and kind of belong in that tier with Minnesota and the Lakers, in my opinion.
Anyone else? Any other big move coming, you think? Or is this going to be quiet summer? It doesn't seem like the Giannis move is going to happen. What do you think happens from here?
I think it's going to be a very, very interesting summer from a news standpoint. I think there are massive moves coming. I think there are a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference right now who are incentivized to either completely clean house and, punt on the year because of injury situations. I'm looking squarely at Boston and Indy, and or they're incentivized to go for it like the Magic did with Bane. That was a pretty healthy, price to pay for a guy who doesn't really move their offensive number that much. But there's going to be some bigger moves, I think, this year involving some top 25 players, and particularly in the Eastern Conference. And I'm mostly excited to see, can the Pistons get some shooting? Are the Hawks going to use some of their assets, bundle them to try to make a splash and become a factor? And then, in particular, are the Knicks going to find a coach? No, I'm sure they will, but
Jenkins, I'm
there's,
guessing. I mean, you can't fire Thibodeau for Mike Brown. Okay? It's got to be Jenkins, I
if
would
they
think.
do, that's going to be a pretty sad story. But yeah, the Cavaliers may elect to make some changes. Tough to see how running that back, is a viable strategy with the way that their exit was, had such an exclamation point on it. So, the stories that I'm mostly following are kind of your fringe contenders who are not at the front of mind to win the East right now, who have the capital and the incentive to make a splash, and kind of put themselves in the mix. So the guys who are kind of in that 5, 6, 7, 8 tier right now are the ones who I'm the most keen on seeing what are they going to do.
Drew, this was awesome, man. Hopefully this draft goes well for you and for I and for all of our listeners. I appreciate the time, man. Hopefully do it again soon. Not that long, man. Football. I know what football preview's coming soon on the deep dive. What do you got coming on the deep dive?
Yeah, after July 4th, we get right into football season. We'll preview some. We'll start light with some macro thoughts, some schedule thoughts, some talk about our process, and then we'll get into team by team previews come end of July.
You want to tease it? Do you have a team you have a hottest take on? You don't have to give any other details, just a team you have a very hot take on.
I'm the furthest off market on the Lions.
Okay.
I am strongly in the camp of the coaching talent that they lost is going to hurt.
Okay.
In particular, I am looking squarely at Mr. Jared Goff taking a massive step backwards now that he doesn't have a play caller in his ear, giving him the answers before the snap. So, consider me ice cold on the Lions, relative to market and in general, NFC North, I think, is only getting one playoff team despite having four really, really good teams in there.
Wow. Drew, awesome, man. Deep Dive Pod, NBC Sports, at Whale Capper. Appreciate it, man. We'll do it again soon, hopefully.
All right, best of luck.
All right, thank you to Drew Dintic. Thank you guys for listening. Rate, review, subscribe, Apple, Spotify, goldboys.com is the Discord. We will be back Friday. See you then.